Good morning. Today is Monday, the 19th of September. Joining us this morning is Mr. Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. Good morning, John.
As always, it is delightful to see your smiling face.
Oh, well, no.
And we also have Rod here with us in the studio. So, hey, Rod. Yeah. Another pleasure.
He's giving us a sign.
Yeah. How many fingers was he waving?
Yes,
at you?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of blurry at the time. Oh, are you ready for our...
Oh, how, why you say it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why do we? This is close.
By the way, I've never gotten one, so here we go.
That's all right. This is close to bank. Why do we say bunk?
Bunk?
Bunk. That's bunk.
B-O-N-K? Bunk?
No, that's boink.
Oh.
B-U-N-K.
Yes. Bunk.
Bunk.
Bunk. I have no idea. Absolutely clueless. And which is a standard answer in my office. You know, people ask me a question.
Many individuals have been responsible for specialized words that are seldom used. Revolutionary General Felix Walker contributed to everyday speech, though he didn't intend to. Buncombe County, North Carolina, sent him to Congress, where he often took the floor to speak at length. Always he explained to the board lawmakers that he was not attempting to speak for the nation, that he had been elected in order to speak for Buncombe. Speaking for Buncombe caused the county's name to be used as a label for foolish chatter. Abbreviated to bunk, Americans now use it to name any burst of hot air as meaningless as an old soldier's oratory from the floor of Congress.
So what we do here is bunk.
Might very well qualify for being a congressional caliber.
Really? Well, that's great, because I'm speaking for the county of Buncombe.
Dano.
I wonder if it's still a county. It's the county name.
Well, I suppose if either of us really cared that much, we could look it up.
We'd start Googling it.
Yeah. And since you're the only one with the phone and it's not being touched.
Yeah. Funny how that works.
Yes, it is, isn't it? So, what do you say? What do you feel out there in the economy? We had the president yesterday saying that. Inflation isn't that bad because it's the same last month as it was the month before. Okay.
Yeah, that works great if you're not buying groceries or on a fixed income. With that said, I did have the opportunity last week on Wednesday to listen to Dr. Seyfried speak on the economy, and he spoke for 2 hours. And he's kind of my go-to guy, and I go to this conference at least annually, primarily because I want to hear his message as to what's happening with the economy. And so the big questions that people are asking is, number one, is as the Fed fights inflation, are we going to have a recession? Or are we in a recession now? And then the second question is, can the Fed bring down inflation without a recession, which would be called a soft landing? So you had a hard landing where we end up in recession, a soft landing where we don't.
Now remember the soft landings from the 80s.
Yes.
That there was that term came in Volcker had.
Right.
That.
And now they've invented a new one, which is softish. So it's somewhere in between soft and hard.
Soft landing with flat tires?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So that's what they're the Fed is saying at this point in time. And of course, there's a lot of disagreement in between as to whether or not we're in recession and et cetera.
Well, as choices happen, you know, I would suspect, kind of as you alluded to, recession is very personal. If you're affected by it, it's top of mind.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that others are dealing with, you may be sympathetic, you may be empathetic, but it's not top of mind. Was there any reference that your buddy said about what percentage of Americans are dealing with the consequences of the fallout of this, whether it's a recession or a depression or soft, hard, bumpy, whatever it might happen to be?
No, he didn't. That would take some polling. It'd be different than the economic data that we have, but it's a really good point. Not everybody's feeling, quote, the recession. Inflation is the piece that most of us are feeling. And the definition of recession, commonly people say it's two quarters of negative gross national product, GMP.
Right, but that was changed this summer.
Well,
it's never
actually been the definition.
Oh, it's just a functional one?
It's been a rule of thumb. It has not been the actual definition. And I've got up my notes here. There is a committee that decides whether or not we're in inflation.
Are these appointed folks?
Correct.
Okay.
And so the question then becomes, does the definition of a recession become a political issue? It's the NBER, which determines whether or not we are in a recession or not. And as you look at some of the indicators, they're mixed. For instance, if you look at the composite leading indices, we've had five months of decline of more than 1%. And so that would define us as heading to or in a recession. Yet the manufacturing index is actually above the level. It's at 52.8, where generally recession's at 43%. So that's, so you have two conflicting indices.
Well, historically, John, when we've gone into what has been referenced as a recession, has there been consistency or have there always been outliers of some sort or another?
It's been pretty consistent in the past.
So that's the wild card this time around, isn't it?
Right. We have inconsistency in the data.
Well, and then all kinds of things get spun off of that as well.
Yep.
KINS, News and Information Time. It is 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with John Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. John, with the information that you were being provided last week with the cost going up in a couple of the industry tracking, what are the individual categories called?
Individual categories?
No. I mean, you guys
talking about the consumer price.
You have a designation at the federal level of what your type of bank is. We have one for the type of media that we are. I forget what that is. It's one of those three-letter jobs. We see increases pretty much across the board. It sounds as if, definitionally, we're not having consensus. But for most folks, they look at the gas. They look at what they can buy at the food store, if need be, clothing. Depending on where you are in that, and the credit card balance. That's probably the primary indicators for most of us. Yeah, you buy eggs every week, probably. But do you buy a TV every week? Hopefully not. Or bedding, mm-hmm. or some of these other consumables that are tracked that are showing increases. But if you don't get it today, I can hold out for another couple weeks before I get that pair of socks. Is there a weighting of these figures that turn into either consumer confidence or change in consumer buying patterns?
Okay, so if I follow you, you're talking about the consumer price index and the individual items on there. And
that
you referenced
that, yeah.
Right, you referenced eggs, which is, I think, 0.126% of the average person's budget, but it's up 40%. So it is up, but it's not a big part of your budget. And then you can go through each of the items. Now, in some durable goods, like you referenced, televisions and smartphones are theoretically, I say theoretically because I haven't seen it in smartphones, but it's theoretically the prices are down in some of the durable goods. Energy costs are a big hike. And so your question is, how does that translate into consumer confidence? Is that correct?
Yeah, or whether it's consumer confidence or consumer buying patterns. I mean, obviously those two are
Consumer buying intertwined a little bit.
You know.
Consumer buying powers are down for a number of reasons. One is the cost of goods is generally up with inflation. 8.2%, I think, was the last number. The other element to that is interest rates, because that's how the Fed is fighting inflation in two ways. It's reducing the money supply. In fact, in the second quarter of this year, we saw the largest drop in bank deposits in the history of the U.S. And so,
now, when you say bank deposit, you know what you're saying. For most of us, is that payroll checks?
So, no, what it means is money is leaving the system in two ways. One is during the Obama administration, the Fed used what was called quantitative easing, which is a fancy term for the printing of money. And so they tripled the money supply during that administration to try and keep the economy afloat. So that expanded the money supply. And so now the Fed has two tools to try and slow down the economy, one being interest rates, and the other is by reducing the money supply. So currently they're reducing it by about $10 billion a month. So money is flowing out of the Federal Reserve, so it's disappearing. Other monies are from exports. So when we buy exports, the money leaves the country and
goes overseas.
Right. Yeah. And so we're seeing those two elements reduce bank deposits. Point being is that the Fed is using those two tools in order to slow down the economy and fight inflation.
Well, is the Fed responsible for money going overseas?
No, they can't control it.
Right, that's
right. Again, but they can control the other piece, the quantitative easing.
Yeah, yeah. So what do they look? What is their goal?
Oh, that's a really good question. So 1 week ago today, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, the Fed Chair Powell made a big speech, and in that speech he said that the goal is to get inflation to 2%, and that they will be relentless. I'm paraphrasing, but they will be relentless to get there, which means rate hikes. They'll push up the interest rate as high as it needs to go, and for as long as it needs to go to get inflation down to that 2%. So that is their number one goal.
So taking prices up would seem that it would take prices up. Well, so how does taking prices up lower the demand?
Well, you're saying saying prices up, but you mean interest rates up. They're raising interest rates, not prices.
No, I would say, okay, they raise the interest rates, then it costs more for fuel. More fuel cost going up causes food products to go up in price, which drives inflation up higher.
So,
am I missing something?
Yes,
in that?
You are. Yes, you are. So are we done for that? There you go.
We had the flying duck. So apparently, you'll be able to construct or reconstruct what I missed. And when we come back, you'll be able to figure out for everybody else, and maybe me too, what I missed. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I can't forget.
getting, I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time, it's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with John Dalby. So, John, what did I miss in my little circular logic there?
Well, your assumption was that the rising of interest rates is synonymous with the rising of cost of goods. And so, yes, there's an element, but interest rates is a relatively small element in the rising of prices. What it really does by raising interest rates is it slows demand for products. So, for instance, we're used to, most of us refinanced our homes in that 2-3% range. And if we wanted to borrow against the equity of our home today, would you refinance that at 5 or 6%? Most people would not to take money out of their home. Or if they wanted a second, they're going to pay, 5, 6, 7%, depending on the product they choose. Are they willing to do that? Well, they are less willing to do that now than they were before the Fed raised interest rates. So what they're trying to do is slow consumer consumption, and it's also going to slow the expansion of business, thus slowing the economy, thus reducing inflation. And that's why we're concerned about going into recession, and we're all trying to define what recession is. And we have different opinions on whether or not we're going to go in. So if we go into this recession, that's a hard landing. If we don't, it's called a soft landing. And now the Fed is calling it a soft-ish landing. So they have a new term.
Medium.
Yeah, which has not been defined. But it's somewhere between soft and hard.
So if the interest rates go up, manufacturers oftentimes either work off of lines of credit or getting a loan to be able to build capacity, let's say like an automotive manufacturer trying to do the chips, okay, have to take out a loan. Well, if now the cost is too high, it's prohibitive, that doesn't happen. Demand stays the same, theoretically, and prices start going up because supply is not able to keep track, adding to inflation.
Which is exact opposite of what the Fed is trying to do. They're trying to slow demand,
right,
reduce demand, and supply may diminish, but not at the same rate,
and
thus prices go down.
If the demand is flexible, great. If it's not, you're paying more. Yeah. So
In the break, you mentioned something that I think is really important element here, and that is the cost of energy. Because the one thing the Fed can't do is interfere with the cost of energy.
And the weather.
Yeah, and the weather, a number of other things.
As we're coming up into wintertime, so, when we need this in a lot of areas.
So with that said, a lot of our inflationary pressure has come from the cost of energy. Because, diesel goes up, the price of producing food goes up, the price of moving food goes up. Price of processing food goes up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We're not addressing that. So that piece of inflation, regardless of I think the Fed's action, is going to remain. We're not going to see energy
totally independent.
Right. And that is politically purposed in order to drive people away from fossil fuels to alternative fuels. And that is why the administration is doing what they're doing. That's my opinion of why they're doing it.
So more of a legislation of consumer behavior.
Sure. I mean, the IRS has been used, IRS rules have been used to change social behavior for years and years.
So when you were down at the meeting, I'm presuming it was in California,
mm-hmm,
there was the request by the governor not to charge your EVs because the infrastructure wasn't available with enough power to be able to handle what they were anticipating during a period of time when more people than normal needed electricity.
It's a heat wave.
Yeah, so we're...
Does that fit into this equation anywhere?
Well, that's...
Or is reality again, just kind of uncomfortable?
Well, we're you've got a dichotomy of thought here. One, you know, California is telling us and Newsom is telling us that by 2035, you won't be able to buy a gas-powered vehicle in the state of California. You have to buy electric. So
or out
they're
of
trying,
state.
Right. So they're trying to legislate the movement from fossil fuels to electricity. At the same time, we're getting rid of dams that produce electricity. They're being removed. We have, I think, one nuclear power plant left, and Diablo was going to be decommissioned. In fact, a friend of mine went there for that to work on the decommissioning. So we're gonna increase substantial demand for electricity, already crippled, and we're not doing anything. You know, there's been no planning of how we're going to build an energy infrastructure. It's like if you purchase an electric car and you plug it into the grid, well, you're burning natural gas to create the electricity. So the idea that you have no carbon footprint, you know, is not true. Your energy is coming from burning of fossil fuels. And in fact, in most cases, I mean, other than what you have some dams, the geysers, and a nuclear plant, everything else is fossil fuels being burned.
Yeah, until we get the windmills out off the coast, if that happens, you know, with the tie-in. So I guess one of the fears that a lot of us have is that many of these decisions are being made in a vacuum, that they're not seeing the connection.
They're siloed.
Yeah, well, even the silos on a farm, you can look out and see the field.
Yeah,
these just kind of seem to be in their own little cubby holes, and the thought that one might interact with another or could be like the series of dominoes just doesn't mm-hmm. seem to enter into the equation. Is anybody standing up and saying, hey, time out? Or is that just not the political environment we live in right now?
Well, there are things I don't understand. You know, the biggest polluters on the planet are China and India. Why are we not boycotting, you know, those countries from imports until they clean up their act? And so
literally
the things that we do, you know, for instance, if I go out and buy an electric car, and as I mentioned, I'm now just burning natural gas instead of gasoline. But if I convert to electricity at my home from natural gas or whatever it is, that's incrementally a very, very small change in what's going on until we address.
Other than putting gas station owners and operators out of business.
Right. And they, yeah. I think that the best way to describe what we're doing ecologically is we're standing in a swimming pool.
Oh, the Jimmy failure.
Yes, yeah. Yes. I thought it was great. Yeah. We're standing in a swimming pool saying, you know, it's okay if you pee over in that corner.
Yeah. You're in the we're the no pee zone.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's going to happen. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:44.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Mr. Dalby from Redwood Capital Bank. There was something we were going to talk about that we talked about during the break. Do you remember what that was?
You were asking me about fuel prices and inflation.
And it just kind of seems...
Long-term loss of short-term memory or short-term loss of long-term memory.
Yeah, I don't remember. Just loss. Leave it there.
Yeah.
And forgetting what you lost, so it's really irrelevant that you lost it, right? What did they see as their primary concerns?
Who's they?
For the next 6 months during your
seminar. The Fed?
During your presentation, your workshop.
Okay, so the Federal Reserve is laser-focused on inflation, which is the number one issue economically, and number two, it is the number one political issue. With that said, they are in the administration currently is spending money and doing things that would cause inflation. So they're generating currency and putting it into the market while the Federal Reserve is taking it out.
So it drives it up even higher.
So the two of them are right now at odds.
Yeah.
Trying to fight inflation. You know, it's like the Inflation Reduction Act. How can you spend your way out of inflation? You can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, the numbers don't work. But with that said, that's the name they put on it.
Well, with the fuel prices being as much as they are and top of mind with everybody, isn't that a leading contributing factor to the inflation? And if they just did something to
bring
energy costs down and into where they were, a couple years ago, wouldn't that take a lot of the heat off those inflation numbers?
Well, the primary the answer to your question is political, and it has to do with social engineering. So the Inflation Reduction Bill was really a Green New Deal bill in order to drive more alternative energy sources. And so the idea of then reducing fuel costs is contrary to what they're trying to accomplish. So the administration wouldn't want, theoretically, I can't pretend to know what was going on in their heads and why they do things. But based on their actions, they're trying to keep fuel prices high and reduce the supply in order to move our society towards alternative energy sources.
So doesn't that then shift the impact of everything that they're trying to accomplish into all other sectors?
Yes.
So it's
virtually everything on that consumer price index
has to make up for that.
Is a portion of those increases are from fuel, and it would vary by product. But overall, I'm just shooting from the hip saying it's got to be 50% of it.
Your takeaways from your meetings.
So the takeaways are, one is we're looking at increases in interest rates by at least 2% by the end of the year. Second, that they're going to be there for a while because we have to get inflation down, and we might see more increases past the first of the year. And third is we're going to continue to see the reduction in the money supply. And with that said, you're going to start seeing banks, although we haven't had this issue at all, but we're starting to see banks that are having funding issues, meaning their deposits are dropping.
Does that mean solvency?
It could, but I think we're a long ways from having any kind of bank failures because of it.
Is there any thought that the political outcome in November could change this?
Our discussions were purely economic, not political. So
sounds to me like politics was woven throughout this because
politics
of some of the
is an issue.
Yeah.
Politics is an issue, but at the same time, it's pure speculation as to who's going to win in November. I mean, I could argue both ways.
The definition of a banker.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
Always good to see you.
See everybody tomorrow.